Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to The Millennial Dentist Podcast. Two nights in a row for us.
Two nights in a row. Season 2, episode 2.
I tell you what, I have been, it's funny. I was Instagram live on the way over here. You know, we took like about 2 months off from recording. We had gone 68 episodes in a row hard. Since February of 2016?
Yeah, it was 17, I think.
17?
17, yeah, because it's a year
and
a half.
February 17, year and a half. So, and pretty much straight through episodes, y'all, and it was good. But the problem was, I think, one, we got to a point where both of us were so busy with work, with traveling and all that stuff, and then we had a couple no-shows or people kind of canceling on us. And so we are, I'll tell you this, we are super pumped to get back in the saddle, to be regularly recording again. I miss it. And I need it. It's like I need this. I need my daily dose of, or my weekly dose of payment and recording.
We need. It was funny because yesterday I was driving to his office because most of the time we do these recordings over at his office because it's so chill and it's right like where I live too and it's close to
nice.
Our both houses.
So we got Murph's next door.
Yeah, we got Murph's next door. So we were just like, man, it's been a while since like what are we going to talk about? Because we had so much stuff. But yesterday it was awesome because we had a great speaker, Dr. Michael Picos. He just made it so easy. Like, I mean, just listening to him, talking to him, it's always fascinating. So we're very lucky to have you today. I'm glad that he actually drove up.
I know, this is so much. Okay, so everybody, we have Dr. Paul Bass with us, co-founder of Fortune Management. Welcome, Doc.
Thank you, sir. Pleasure to be here.
Fortune Management. I think a lot of people know it because of Tony Robbins also.
He's kind of a big deal.
But you were also part of that whole thing with the co-founding of this.
Yes, actually, Tony and I and two other people co-founded the company back in 1988.
Yeah, I was born.
Wait a minute. I misspoke. I met Tony in 88. We actually formed the company in 1990. It took about a year and a half to put
it
together.
Yeah. So in Tullahoma, was in Tennessee? Sorry,
I practiced for 21 years down in Tullahoma, Tennessee. Yes.
Wow.
But we were already in the seminar business. Actually, how that all came about back in 1988, my college roommate, a very good friend of mine, gave me a copy of a book called Unlimited Power. By Tony Robbins, Anthony Robbins. And I have to admit, I'm embarrassed to admit that it was set on my nightstand for probably a couple months. And I kept thinking, yeah, I need to read that. I should read that. You know, so the reviews look pretty good on there. So finally, I picked the book up. And when I got started, I finished the book in probably, 4 days, right? Because as soon as I started, I was like,
awesome.
This, we are on the same wavelength. Like what he's doing in his company and what you do, you need to. In fact, I'll just jump forward one step and tell you, this is a principle that I have carried forward, Dr. Sullivan, and I truly believe in it. So you mentioned your heroes. Meet your heroes. Make a point to meet your heroes.
That's cool.
That can be life-changing.
Mentors.
Yeah. You never know what's going to come from it. I didn't want to meet Tony so we could start a company. Here's what happened. I basically read his book and I thought, wow, this guy's on the same wavelength we are. He knows some things that I don't know. And I love learning, right? So,
gosh, that is good
and
advice.
At that point, meet your heroes. And I could give you a list of them, all the way back to Dr. Robert Schuller, the guy who started the Crystal Cathedral out in Garden Grove, California, Zig Ziglar, Brian Tracy. I mean, on and on and on. Make a point to meet your heroes because when you do, it's just weird what happens. You know, first of all, you're around people where things are good. Some of it rubs off, right?
No, you're exactly right.
But you get on the same wavelength. So the bottom line is, so I call out to Robbins Research International. This is in 88 and probably January, February of 88. And I said, I'd like to take one of Mr. Robbins' seminars. They said, great, here's the schedule, yada, yada, yada. So I, checked it against my schedule. I'm flying all over the country, as we talked about a moment ago, doing seminars myself. No match for the rest of the year. This is like in the beginning of 88. So I called him back and I said, well, I tell you what, how about I have him come here and do a seminar for me? They said, well, yeah, he'll do that. I said, okay, cool. Well, what would the cost be? And they said, well, what seminar do you want? And I said, well, I like this UPW, this Unlimited Power Weekend. So that's about a 2.5-day course. Well, they say his fee, now this is in 1988, okay? His fee is $20,000 a day. So it's a 2.5-day course. So the fee is $50,000. Okay, so I thought, okay, well, how can this is great. Using questions, you can create incredible things, right? So I said, okay, how can I make this a win-win so he gets paid, I get incredible value, and I also share with my doctors? So I thought, okay, I'll have him come into Atlanta. We'll get a hotel space down there. We'll have him come in and do this, and I'll have 50 of my doctors bring their spouses or significant others with them, right? Everybody pays $1,000 a piece. Tax deductible, and there we go. So Tony came in, we did the deal, and you know, it was Friday night, the seminar starts like at 6 o'clock, right? By Saturday at lunchtime, I'm like, this guy and I need to talk, right? And this was never planned in advance. It just is how it rolled, right? So we get in my car to drive across, his wife, my wife, Tony, and myself, get in my car to drive across to the Atlanta Perimeter Center Mall. And there's, I think it was a Houston's or a Friday's or something like that, because we're in the Marriott Perimeter Center, right? So we start over there, and we're pulling out of the parking lot of our hotel. And this is almost like divine guidance. You ever say something sometimes and you don't, like, where did that come from, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
So I asked Tony
every
to.
Every day.
Yeah, every day. Yeah. So I said, Tony, what's the purpose of your organization? He said, it's bringing the greatest transformation to the largest number of people in the shortest period of time. I mean, he just rattled it off, man. And I was like, whoa, this guy, you know, he knows what the heck he's up to, right? And then the next question came, well, would it further the fulfillment of your vision to have a branch in healthcare?
Again, another good question.
It didn't. I'm telling
questions.
You. I'm just telling you.
I just got to sit down with you because I asked all the wrong questions.
I didn't. No, there's no wrong question. There's just maybe a better one, right? But the truth of the matter is, this was not preconceived. I didn't. I mean, sure. It just rolled, right?
Yeah.
I just trust the subconscious, and I believe in divine guidance for sure. It's what guides my life. And next thing I know, you know, I got the board of directors of our company going out to La Jolla, that's where his office was, out to Del Mar, California, to where he lived at that time, called the Del Mar Castle. And we're taking a seminar, which is now taught once a year. It used to be taught all over the world, but now he does it once a year down in Palm Beach, right? It's called Date with Destiny. To this day, the best course I've ever taken. We go into the castle, we're sitting in there, there are like six of us, eight more people, there are 14 people sitting in the castle taking Date with Destiny. And none of my partners had actually been present for this event down in Atlanta. So anyway, people were like totally enthralled. 2 months later, we're taking a two-week NLP training out in Hawaii from him. And there we talked about, you know, how would we put this thing together and how would it work? And it just took off from there.
So from then, that point that you said, so you wanted him to get into the medical or the medical field? Or the healthcare.
Well, it was just a question. I was just
curious. But what exactly was it that you were looking for that was lacking that you even made you think of that? Like, what was the point? What was the reason?
I didn't perceive a lack. I don't come from lack. I come from total abundance. I knew that there was more. Does that make sense? There's more there. I'd already read his book. I'd already been in the room with him, you know, Friday evening and Saturday morning. I'm like, this guy is one of the brightest minds on the planet. I want more. My doctors would love more. People like you guys.
Because there's more there and you
yes.
saw it in him and you're like, hey, what about this?
Exactly.
And what was his, how did that go from starting out to now? How much has it changed or is it the same principles that you guys are starting with?
Same principles. Yeah.
So same principles of what is the mission statement? Or like what is the exactly that you guys wanted to do?
Yeah, that's it. So the mission statement was to transform lives and make, so first of all, there are two dentists, right, who are part of this. We wanted to preserve private fee-for-service practice for dentistry and not have it be.
Love.
Yeah, exactly.
We are pro practice.
But we also want to be successful. We want our staffs to have fully funded pension plans. Right. We want to, and back in those days, the in vogue plan was actually a pension profit sharing plan. And I had a PC. So that's what we had. But you know what's interesting is that no matter how hard you work, it's very easy not to have extra money because your wants and needs will always exceed your available cash flow. And that's where I was and many young dentists are. But one of our specialties is just putting practices on steroids. And we grow them rapidly. And that has typically excess money that can be invested for additional equipment, things of that nature. But making certain that we're funding our future.
Well, and we, you know, we talk a lot about trying to encourage dentists to set goals, to step back. You know, I feel like one of the biggest negatives that happens because, you know, the big thing that the big excuse, frankly, that we get now is student loans. You know, and it's a big deal. It's a big number, and so too many times I feel like our the reason we make decisions or the guiding factor is more or less, how am I going to pay these loans down? And it is kind of this fear. It's not coming from a mindset of abundance. It's more of the scarcity mentality. And so we don't make decisions that allow us to succeed or flourish, rather, you know, because we're coming at it from that standpoint. So we're afraid to fail. We're afraid to take risks, to do things, to invest in our practices or our education or whatever it is, which hurt us. And so that's something I think that we're trying to, you know, constantly, I guess, rewrite and say. And really, you've done it more than anyone, Pam, just being on your own and going out and doing a startup.
I feel like
and
doing this. But it comes all from the being in the places where you're uncomfortable and you have to struggle and you have to do things that you never wanted to. And now if you don't do it, you're just going to go down. So now it's all about like, oh my goodness. So it's all on me, on my shoulder. So I think a lot of people do not want to face that type of a situation because I'm a risk taker. Like I was cool, but like, okay, I'm going to sleep in my car. Like, or
I'll make it work.
But I think a lot of folks, especially when it gets to that age, because of now new relationships, they have kids. I mean, think about so many of our friends. I mean, I'm looking on Facebook and they're on their third and fourth, and I'm still drinking with my friends.
Well, hey, there's pros and cons to all lifestyles.
They're like, what's going on? I mean, they don't want to take that risk. They're like, oh, I have kids.
Well, they have a lot more to lose, right? You know, to some degree.
Right.
Which is, I mean, that's so the scary
I think
part.
A lot of it is also the environment that they are at that moment or that phase of their life. Because I have some of my friends, again, we have so many mutual friends that they're going through that phase, but they don't, some people that don't choose it, they're just afraid or scared, which is no problem. No, nothing wrong with it.
Well, before we started recording, you were kind of talking about how important it is to have that kind of vision of what does the doctor want? You know, is it money? Is it time? Is it, you know, what is it that they want to have? Because really that end goal is really what defines everything else. Wouldn't you say?
I mean, I would definitely agree with that. And basically what I would though add to that, this is a way just to augment the value of that conversation. It shouldn't be just the doctor's vision. It's primarily his or hers vision, but in Fortune, what we teach is having the staff participate in creating what we call a shared vision. Because the staff will, if the staff has ownership in the vision, and in making the vision happen, that's totally different than just, you know, a doctor saying, well, here's our vision, guys, go home and memorize
it. I struggle with that to some degree, though, because I think because I'm in total agreement with you. If the team doesn't buy into the vision,
right,
then they're not on board. The hard part for me is, though, is at the end of the day, it's my practice loan. It's my ass on the line if we get sued. It's my insurance. It's my, you know, I'm paying the roof. Yes. I'm paying the mortgage. So, and to some point, it's my vision, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I better be happy.
It.
Like, and I don't mean to say
it
selfishly, but like, I think that's I think that's a hard dichotomy of how do I bridge what I want with what they want with the shared vision that you talk about. Because that's a hard part, I feel.
You
like.
Look to the future. And what I mean by that is this. You are here doing all those things you just mentioned, but how are you taking care of your end game? Right? Becoming financially free so that you can work out of choice, sure, rather than necessity, and have your team be on that wagon with you. Does that make sense? Yeah. Instead of the doctor in front of the, you know, wagon pulling the cart that all the staff members are riding in, then you got everybody teamed up pulling the cart. So I think getting a staff involved in a shared vision is really the key, because remember something, 80% of getting anything done in life is knowing why to do it.
Why?
So if the staff has
love Simon Sinek.
If the staff has a compelling reason why, they'll figure out a way.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
And it's not always money. That's what I like.
No,
I just assumed it was money. Like if I was a guy, I pay them more, then that will get me to do what I want to do.
That's how it was. When I first opened, I thought the more money means that these people are going to be like motivated more or this, but it's not even the money. It's sometimes when I explain the why, I see them super more motivated than if I explain the benefits or
because they
bonuses.
They don't even care. That's exactly right. They want to be part
of
the game.
He said something good because he said, how would you get them to buy in?
To the vision?
Right.
You let them participate in the creation of the vision. And I somehow knew we would end up at this.
Yeah. Let them participate in the creation of the vision.
We did that actually with, and it's, we have this poster now that like, we basically just took words. It was kind of funny. And I didn't think about it to bring it. Of course, I don't remember it, but we tried this.
So what kind of words did you use? Or how did you stimulate? How did you ask? What questions did you ask to get them
The questions we asked was, okay, what is it everybody wants? What makes you happy? And essentially what it did, I think some of the words were transform. It was some degree is it was working together to transform lives it was kind of wordy, to achieve a more balanced and healthy, fun lifestyle.
I heard achieve, I heard fun, I heard balance. What transformation
family,
absolutely.
I think was in there. Legacy, with our family, obviously legacy is very important to our team and our family, because, right. It's so much. So we incorporate a lot of these words and put it together. And I do think it is cool how
words are just words though.
Yeah, well, but they claim.
Here's what makes it important, makes it significant. Is make sure that you are inputting emotion-evoking words. Transformation is an emotion-evoking word, right? And I want to, where we start in Fortune with an office is that we have the team collectively create a vision statement that's about what they all want to accomplish. Does that make sense? And the way we do it is we ask people to write down, and there may be only two or three words that an individual may write down. Write down the emotion-evoking words like transformation that for you speak to your calling in dentistry, right? Yeah. And by the way, if I'm dealing with a medical practice or a chiropractic practice or an optometrist, exactly. It's the very same thing. So I somehow knew we were going to migrate there. So I brought with me a vision statement created by,
nice.
I'm going to read it first. I'm going to leave a copy with it. Yeah. This was created.
Could you leave that copy for me?
It is all yours. But let me just say this. What makes this so powerful is not taking someone else's and adopting it as your own, right? Mm-hmm. Is that having your team be the people to put these emotion-evoking words together. Sure. First of all, this is mission statement, or vision statement from the Geffen Cancer Center and Research Institute in Vero Beach, Florida. Dr. Jeremy Geffen was a very dear friend of mine, probably the most brilliant mind-body connection oncologist in the world. And I had the privilege of working with, actually Tony referred him to me, and I had the privilege of working with him from the first time I was in his office. We were figuring out what furniture we could rent to put in the reception room. I'm talking from the very baseline, right? Yeah, from the ground up, exactly. And I worked with him through his entire professional career. Unfortunately, he also had cancer himself and passed away a few years ago. But I had his team do this exercise, okay? I had everyone write down, what are the emotion-evoking words that for you represent what's significant in your calling, right? So, Payman, if I were to ask you that, what would you say? Give me a couple emotion-evoking words, yes.
Loved.
Love, okay.
Fear.
Fear.
I would say attached.
Attached.
Connected.
Connected. So like a connectedness between people, right?
Yeah, like bonds.
Okay.
Between
relationship might be part of that.
Relationships are good.
Yeah.
What else?
No, I think those are spot on for you. I would say I think part of the reason you're sick, when you're truly successful with your practice and whatnot, it's definitely, I would say you have a phenomenal way of emotionally relating and connecting with patients that, money's never an issue. Money's not the issue. Time's not the issue. They find ways to do things because they're connected in you and trust you in a way that allows you to succeed. So I think all the things you said were spot on.
And when the team is connected at an emotional level, it's not about the money. In fact, it should never be about the money. If it's just about the money, then we haven't connected emotionally to a level that's significant that's going to make a difference. So here is the vision statement. Our vision is to provide the highest quality healthcare available anywhere in the world. And that just knocks you back, right? Stops you in your tracks. And to transform the quality of life of our patients and their loved ones in profound ways. We offer meticulous, uncompromising, state-of-the-art medical care with a commitment to honoring and caring for the beauty, importance, and sovereignty of ourselves and every person we have the privilege to serve with love, joy, compassion, and ultimate respect.
That's a pretty solid mission statement.
Now, I want you to think about this. That's your payment. You guys.
That's why people get out of bed in the morning,
yeah,
right there.
That's the whole point. You know, 80% of getting anything done is knowing why to do it. So you walk in, let's say, for example, you'd gotten diagnosed recently. You walk into the Geffen Cancer Center, to this beautiful environment, highly polished, you know, marble floors, ficus, you know, skylights, ficus, benjamin, trees everywhere. You walk in there, and there on the wall, scripted in an artist's hand, is that vision statement. Now, you have just been diagnosed. How are you? What are you going to think? What's your
I'm in the right place.
I'm in the right place. I've asked that question 1,000 times. That's always the answer. Okay, now, what are the emotion evoking words?
I try to put mine over there.
Oh, great. So those, okay.
So that's what I put in. In the journey of pursuing my lifelong dreams of happiness comes many challenges. My greatest joy in my pursuits towards creating my new smile will be the evidence of overcoming those challenges and recognizing my happiness written in the smiles of my patients.
Wow, that's powerful.
But again, that's not a vision statement, though.
No, it's not. But it's a great statement of who you are. That speaks volumes to, and by the way, having it posted right, having it hanging right there, it's a beautiful way to display it. Your patients come in here, they see that, and they know who you are before they ever walk in there.
I spent a lot of money on that too.
You made that up yourself, didn't you? That wasn't your creation, was it?
No, that was actually
Jocelyn
Signs.
Well, if it speaks to you, it's still
is. No, I came up with that.
Yeah.
That took forever.
Yeah, you wrote it.
Thesaurus, like dictionary.com, figuring out.
You pulled out some big words for that.
Yeah,
I had to
work hard. Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes it very, very powerful. So bottom line is having a shared vision, there's nothing. I would have that there because that tells your patients
who
you are.
What you said is very important because I always refer that to my team whenever we talk. Like I tell them, hey, this is, but then when you said that shared vision, that's another level.
Well, that would say it's the only negative to that is.
Right.
That's about you.
Yes. Now, when you come with this, what's the next step?
Well, may I just say one more thing about this? Okay, so I want you to just listen one more time with your ear finely tuned to emotion-evoking words. I'll just pick them out of the paragraphs. Quality. Transform.
Meticulous.
Profound.
Yeah, meticulous.
Good. Meticulous. Uncompromising. Your listeners, of course, are writing these down, right? Don't use someone else's. Create your own. State-of-the-art medical care with a commitment to honoring, caring, beauty, importance, sovereignty, privilege, serve, love, joy, compassion, respect.
That's a lot of love.
That's what makes that powerful.
That's
so it is made. Now, his team created that. It took them probably longer than any other practice I've ever had. Every practice, this is the first thing we do. I mean, you start with, what are we here for? Yeah, exactly. If you don't have a vision.
So here's my question. Because this is kind of what's interesting is we really tried to kind of, this past spring, we really tried to, or I guess start of the new year, we really tried to go in a different direction because what had happened was we had massive growth, tons of growth, awesome growth. But then the point was you start to realize, okay, we're hitting a wall to some degree that we got to figure out how to break through the wall. And my thought was, which is exactly kind of to what you're alluding to, is like we got a team of 11 people. If I can get all 11 people to give me 10% more effort, that's 110% more effort. Like that's significant increase, right? So how do I motivate my team in a way to buy in bigger to get 10% more effort? Because if I do that, it's huge. So the hard part though, or the struggle, and this is where I'm interested to hear your thoughts is. When you do this, there's got to come a moment in practices where there's one or two team members who realize they're there for a job,
yes,
or they're not buying into the vision, or
correct,
they're not, and so the scary part about this is it sometimes needs change,
yes,
which terrifies dentists for the most part.
Yeah, it terrifies.
So how do you deal with that? Because like at some point you got to sit down and you got to realize you're sitting there especially as a coach, being like, oh gosh, Sally. Like this whole team's buying in, they're getting on board, but like she is clearly not.
I think you'll see
what
how this
say,
all
a stepchild. What is it? What did she said the other day? Or just a minute?
Stepchild.
No, she said something else. Like a
I don't know. What are you talking about?
I had summer earlier, and all my I was calling them all daughters. Like my assistants were all my. I was like, where are my daughters
oh
at?
Oh my gosh!
And then she was like, oh,
is this
I'm
a Persian
your...
thing?
No, I was just thinking of, like, where are my children? It's more like I was like. Yeah, where are my children? And then she was like, oh, everybody's gone. All your children's gone. I'm the stepchild. I was like, no, you're not the stepchild. You're here. But anyways, sorry.
Well, let me address. Let me address basically what you're saying. I think that what you'll find, these are like the four cornerstones of building an unstoppable team. A team that can absolutely go.
Get out of pen and paper.
Yeah, exactly.
Take this down.
Well, the good news you have today, the four cornerstones of team, strong team, unstoppable team. Number one, shared vision. It really cannot excite a group of staff members working for you. They'll appreciate it. They'll think, oh, he's a neat guy. Look at his vision. But I'm telling you, when they own it, it's different.
So how do you follow? So, okay, I'm going to kind of interrupt on each one of these probably. So on that one specifically, how do your offices do that every day? Like, how does that become a norm to them?
That's a great question.
Other than it just being like, we did this cool exercise.
This exercise back in 1978.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
So here's how you do that. And it's so simple. You stop it. This is simple stuff, right? So every staff meeting, guess what the staff meeting starts with? Reading the vision. Pardon me?
Reciting the vision.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they can pass it around. You know, different people do it, you know, whatever. But the bottom, I went into an office one time that had learned, they all learned it. And so I came in from my next console with this office, and they sat down to do this meeting, and they say, okay, and they all of a sudden they recited it, you know, like in harmony together. But the point is, every staff meeting, the very first step, read the vision statement. Okay. And then spend about maybe 60 seconds having people share about specific things that we did in this past week that support the fulfillment of the vision.
Magnify that, yeah.
Yeah, and make it real. Somebody was like, you know, Dr. Selly, when you stayed late, you know, I know you were down at 9 o'clock that night working on that lady. I mean, that was just, that was fulfilling our vision, man. Or, you know, when you took extra care payment with
So celebrating the wins, essentially.
Celebrating the wins.
That's something, we don't do that enough.
No, I don't think we do that enough.
We love that. We all love to have morning huddles and point out negatives and bad things, and they become these, you know.
Well, whenever I start, I try to say, hey, what'd you do this weekend? What'd you do?
That's rapport building.
That's good.
Yeah, I don't like, because they're all waiting, like, oh, who's the first patient? Like, you know, and I'm like, hey, what'd you do this weekend? And that's about it. But then
that's nice.
Okay, who's number? Who's
that's nice to create rapport. I tell you what also is helpful, though, is to acknowledge people. To give them a sincere thank you when they've done an amazing job. You don't have to wait till they're doing this in the staff meeting, reading the vision statement. You could just, Monday morning, you just say, you know, Bridget, I just thought about this over the weekend. I was so proud of the way you handled that, you know, certain situation.
Thank you
last
for Instagramming
week.
Us.
Does that make
staying
sense?
Staying late, Instagramming us.
Yeah.
That's what we're thankful
That's
for.
That's what we're thankful for.
I've asked this question in seminars, dental associations, you know, large, you know, several hundred people in the room, countless times. I'll say, so, you know, staff members, let's be honest. How many of you would say that, in fact, a heartfelt acknowledgement or a sincere thank you is far more valuable than money? And I'm telling you, 95% of the times, all the hands go up. It's not about the money. Money's nice. I have no issue. This is a capitalistic society, and I have no problem with that. But I want to make sure we stay on track with these four principles, or we'll be here at midnight trying to do this piece. So you make it real. You read it, right? Start the staff meeting. Then you share for, like, not long, but that just brings it back to, that's who we are. That's what we're doing, and we exhibit it every single time we walk in these doors. Okay? That's number one cornerstone. Number two, a set of operating principles that we call agreements. Agreements provide certainty. And so you take a look at your vision, and then you have, who created the vision, by the way? The team did, right? So then we have the team think about how should we be together? What are some agreements we should have about how we're going? See, most offices are operating on assumption. I think it's far more powerful to operate from agreements. So the team participates in creating agreements.
It is so important. He's talking about manual, right? Like, they have a good manual agreement contract based on where, like, job descriptions, job duties for the doctor, for the team, right?
That's not what I'm referring
Wrong.
To. But what? No. I didn't intend to sound
not
that way.
Close.
So what I'm saying is that those are policies. Those are critically important. You've got to have policies.
Not a cornerstone.
But these
That's
are
not a cornerstone.
These are principles that we all agree. And I'm going to give you an example. Dr. Sully asked for some examples. Okay, so how about an agreement that says we agree to treat each patient as we would treat a loved one? We agree to play at 100%. We agree to always have each other's back. We agree to support one another in keeping our agreements. Think about that one for a second, right? We agree to coach and be coached. We agree to always communicate an issue we have to the person who could actually do something about it. In other words, put the mail in the right mailbox. Don't go chattering to everybody else about this issue you have with this person.
Put the mail that in the right mailbox.
Wow. Yeah. So one of the biggest cancers in professional practices, and dentistry is not as bad as medicine, okay? But dentistry has botched the communications thing a good bit, because you go in the lab many times, what do you hear? People in there talking about other staff members in a not so pleasant way. So what does that do to your team? It's a killer, okay? So that would be another example. We agree to communicate only when we have an issue. We agree to communicate with only the person who can do something about it. I don't mean the boss, like you'll go to him, he'll fix it. No, the person you have the issue with, right? And if there's one challenge with that. If you don't have communication tools in place that allow that communication to be open, honest, supportive, and non-judgmental, it's a train wreck, right? So we have communication tools. That's actually the third cornerstone. So the second one is
the
agreements.
Second one, to have those statements, not only the shared vision, but now let's talk about what are the things that principles, like kind of like a constitution, right? It would be more like a thing that you like, this
you
is-
You can call it that.
Like, these are the principles that we are about to see.
Well, but the nice part about this is what I like about the agreements is that you now have something- You now have to some degree something to stand on when you can say, hey, this is the agreements that we've all kind of come together on, you know, communicating in a way that is, you know, directly with the people that the issue's with is that and so when I hear, you know, from other, you know, team members that you're going and kind of saying this, like, that's a breach of what we all believe in.
Bingo.
And so you're not coming from a place of, you're just kind of saying, hey, this is what we agreed on. You're kind of
off base,
you know, what's going on?
So it's not Dr. Sully's rules.
Right.
It's our team agreements.
Yeah.
Right.
Or like, hey, we want 100% effort. You've been given a 75. What's going on? You know, like, how can I help you, you know, get to that point,
which is a valuable question.
You know,
yeah. How do you get, like, these are great. I mean, don't get me wrong, as far as these are very, very important, powerful things, the cornerstone. But most of the problem is when one or two or the whole cluster, you said something nicer, like when it gets crazy. How do you deal with that when there is some problems, or there is like people that don't get there are people that never get it.
But my thing is,
you know, like, I'm just like, wow.
Is ultimately, I think the buck stops with us. I mean, I think ultimately, like, that's the whole point to some degree, is that the leader of the office ultimately has to be you. And so you've got to create a culture and environment that, one, we have to allow that to happen.
I would agree with that.
Where they come to us and we can have that. And that we have the ability to, when they're wrong, coach them up or tell them what we have these breaches.
That's exactly right. Right.
So you coach them. Now, whenever you build an office, because a lot of our listeners, let's get back a little bit more within the people that are listening and some of those that are going through building a practice. They're having a hard time finding the right people, is what they say. Now, it's not, again, it's not always the team or their staff, but also the team
leader.
Now,
that's a common thing, is that, yeah.
But what are some of the things that could help them?
Well, first off, we need the fourth cornerstone.
Oh, let's get the third one. It was the communication.
The third one is communications. And there are some communication tools that I think are really valuable.
First, tell us the communication tools.
So, one communication tool is, and by the way, I could get you guys copies of this, but there's a communication tool that we use, and it's actually called a reality check. It's a series of questions. If I'm upset with another human being, and by the way, staff members can take this stuff home, right? Doctors can take this stuff home. I've had countless people tell me that communication stuff that we learned in Fortune totally changed my marriage, saved my marriage, right?
It's so true.
So it's a series of questions that no matter how upset we are with someone, and by the way, don't wait till you get, you know, when you're frustrated, let's start at that level and ask these questions, but it'll handle anything. So you ask certain questions and they allow you to stop and reassess the situation and maybe even take a look at it from the other perspective for a moment, right? I mean, if I drew a line right here, on,
right,
is that concave or convex?
You kind of defuse the situation.
Yeah, exactly. So it diminishes and sometimes totally eliminates the upset. If it eliminates it altogether, where does that tell you it lived in the first place, right? If it just diminishes it, at least you're at a point now where you're going to have a more elegant.
The guys who are listening.
Yes. To the gray matter, right? Between your left ear and your right ear. So if it just diminishes it, that's still a good thing. Because the lower the intensity of the upset, then the less the probability is there's going to be some kind of a train wreck.
And it is fascinating sometimes how when you get upset and you like step back and you're kind of like, why am I upset? Like you're done that, sometimes it's like you're just mad for the sake of being mad.
Well, sometimes
and then you realize
upset.
The situation
sometimes
and it's
patience
like,
gets
yeah,
you upset.
Yeah, we're just like that's like there's so much more going on. I mean, life happens. Okay.
So it all goes to the meaning you're attaching to
right.
it. So,
do you ever get those for communication? Speaking of communication, do you ever get those headsets and stuff to talk while you're doing stuff? Or is that a good thing or no?
I guess it depends on what you're saying into those headsets.
Yeah.
The bottom line is,
what are you saying?
I don't think they're good or bad or right or wrong. I think what really makes the practices work is the people and how the people think. And when you're interviewing and bringing new team members on, I look at their attitudes, their beliefs, and their values. And that's how you surround yourself with like-minded people. So the communication piece aside, the fourth piece is relationships. And the good news is there's no work to do there. When people have a shared vision, they have a set of operating principles called agreements that we all agree to, and we all have ownership in keeping those and supporting one another in keeping those. And anything time that we do get off track, we use empowering communication tools that will lead to amazing relationships. Relationships that are like family. And I think that's the key.
So what happens when you go into offices and you have, they're just, you know, team members are sitting there in the back goes, okay, here comes another consultant or here
right.
comes another shared vision, another,
right.
we're all going to get along. We're going to build these. We're going to do the little kumbaya meeting,
yeah.
right? Because that happens. I mean, I think there are offices who have been, there are team members who have been multiple offices and they've been
right.
this and the doctors don't, you know, because here's my, okay, this is, I guess, a little bit of my soapbox to some degree. My biggest problem with any sort of consultant bringing in someone into your office is that sometimes I feel like as the doctor, we think that I can turn it over to them
right.
and it's all going to work out.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's so true.
And it
and
kills
that doesn't
me.
Work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, at the end of the day, you have to lead by example.
That's exactly right.
And as good as the coach or consultant be, it will fail so fast yep. to me if the doctor isn't on board. And so that's, I guess, my
yeah, surprise. So first of all, you're saying the coach or consultant. There's a major line of differentiation there to just draw in the sand.
Watch
first of all, a consultant.
Well, enlighten me. I don't know. I obviously don't know.
Well, a consultant is someone who comes to an office and gives you information, you know, or, you know,
right,
you go
it's
to
not
their
as much
seminar.
Ongoing
and,
follow
yeah,
up.
Here, bingo. Because the
coaching,
job, coaching
more, like, three like
we
a
have,
therapy.
We come back, we look at
yeah.
plays, we see how we did. Yeah.
Like
let
coach. Me give you my definition of coaching. Coaching is taking on another person's commitment as if it were your own.
Ah, well, I like that. That's
and
good.
Then out and then interacting with that person in such a way as to empower them to get the result they want.
Wow. That's a whole are you writing these down, Bridget?
Say that again. Coaching them, empowering them to get the result that they
yeah.
want.
Coaching is taking on another person's vision as if it were your own. And then interacting with them in such a way as to empower them to get the result, because the coach can't do it for them. He can teach them everything they need to do and hold them accountable to keep their word and do what they said we're going to do. But at the end of the day, they've got to get it done. You know, I tell people many times, at 5 o'clock, I'm on the way to the airport, guys, right? And guess what? I can't. If I could do this for you, I would be happy to. But guess what? You're in Toronto. I'm outside Nashville. A little place by the lake called Tullahoma, you know?
So now these people that, whenever you do these, do you ever come across people that, because I feel like a lot of your job has to do with different personalities. Now there are doctors that are like, you just see it, you're like, man, the whole problem is like your team is not a problem. It's just you. How do you come across and like fix that? How do you fix that? Like, how do you come across and be like,
well,
dude,
asking questions.
Your team's not the problem.
All,
you are.
All coaching goes back to asking questions, right? So a doctor
yeah,
says,
that's
well,
true.
I,
good
I,
coaches, yeah.
yeah. So I believe this is true, right? Okay, I hear you. So I'm just curious, how long have you had that belief? Oh, ever since the day I started practice.
And how's that working for you?
Bingo. Or that cuts to the chase, right? Sully's a bottom line
guy. I'm a Frank guy.
How's that working out for you? Right. But it's asking questions that help a person see the error in their ways.
Because so that's so powerful. Because you don't, instead of you trying to say something, you go deeper. You go try to find the whys. That's why we got to keep going back to that why book every year to just refresh our minds. Why are we doing
that? That's his vision. That's the whole.
Just asking questions. Remember something. This whole company was created by two questions. And I didn't even think about it in advance, right? So questions are extremely, extremely
powerful.
What are
those two questions now that you made us very curious?
You asked
the
questions.
Two questions. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the two questions I asked Tony.
Thought about getting healthcare and the...
What's the purpose of your organization?
That was the purpose of the vision. Oh,
Incidentally, we talked about reading that vision statement, sharing about the fulfillment of it. Guess what you do also in a staff meeting? This one probably takes 2 or 3 minutes maybe. You have agreements, right? Agreements provide certainty. So what else they do in the staff meeting? As soon as they've read that, they've shared for 60 seconds ago or so, someone reads the agreements. Because it's like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Before they sing, somebody hits a certain note, right? So everybody is now singing in harmony in whatever key that happens to be. So the agreements are read, just reminder, okay, yeah, here's what we've agreed to. This is what's going to provide certainty, make us strong. And this is really interesting. Does anybody have any suggestions for additions, deletions, or alterations to our agreements? Every week. Because that's right. Because if you don't do that, what happens is people could feel imprisoned by the agreements. Man, I wish we hadn't made those agreements 3 years ago.
Yeah, I wish we had that. And then that's the thing where there's some offices that have like ideas team, for example, like ideas team. And this team is like 3 people in the group of the staff team members, and they come up with ideas that they want to do to improve the office. So those 3 people come up with the ideas and then they share it with all the group. I don't know what book I read that had that thing, but that was kind of like ideas team.
Well, and I think... You know, a big problem that we have too, and I think you and I have this and a lot of young dentists, is when you come into an office, you know, we talked about this before, where you've got generational differences. You know, that's what I was actually going to get to.
Like, I was like, that's the next thing I want to get to. Go ahead.
You're a young dentist trying to help lead and manage older employees and whatnot, you know, trying to get in line with how do I communicate to them? How do we have this?
Not even that. Old employees, that's true. But also younger, like through your experience of doing this for so long, almost as age as Sully, since 1988.
So 91. He met Tony in 88.
Oh, yeah. So that, how do you see that generation is changing? Like right now, what would you do differently? Because for example, for surgery or for bonding and for things, like things change. And I'm sure in your world,
communication changes to that much.
I don't know. I think there is now different ways of reaching out to that younger girl out of dental assisting school that you could make an exceptional assistant versus somebody else who gets from the same school. Like for example, my assistant that I have right now, Gladys, that she's out with me since I've been out of school, like from the corporate there now, like she's exceptional. And she came from a school that the other people from that same school, I would never want to have anywhere close to the office. But now here, she has so much, like, how do I reach out to her versus the other? Like, how do you get to those people?
I think it's a matter of asking questions, finding out what's important to them. Just, if they value the growth that they're going to have, if they value the opportunities to be a member of an exciting team, to have an exciting vision, then they're probably going to be flexible enough. Excuse me. They're probably going to be flexible enough to consider, you know, altering behaviors that haven't worked in the past and learning new ways to do things like communicate and be a great team member that'll carry forward.
Here's a question for you. Like, and this is something I go through a lot because I see this. For example, let's talk about dental technicians, like lab techs. So lab techs in other countries, in Europe or South America, they have to go to school for like 2 years or 3 years, sometimes 4 years. They get a bachelor license, they get degrees. In America, to be a lab tech, it takes very, very little effort. Not I'm not saying the CDT is like it's not effort, but it's so much less that a lot of people wanting to do it just because they don't really have the passion, but it's something that they want to do quickly and get the degree. With the dental assisting degree right now, there's 8 weeks. 8 weeks or 12 weeks. It takes 3 months for you. You got out of school. You're like, okay, I wanted to go to college, but maybe I don't want to do that right now. Let me get my RDA and come back to school or go to work for somebody. And then you're looking at, they don't know what they want to do. Like, it's just something that you're like, okay, now is this your job to get this girl that has just gone through school like 3 months to get them out and teach them and do all of this? And what if they leave you right in the middle of all of that stuff that you're trying to, because a lot of times I tried to train and I got burned by, again, not, I guess, I don't know what I needed to do, but I mean, after this, I feel like I should have asked the right questions.
I think you're on the right track. Let me tell you, my two dental assistants were with me for years. One lady was there from the day I opened my practice. She actually, I sold my practice, obviously, several years ago. She was still there until maybe 2 or 3 years ago, right? There was another lady in there who is still there today. I was in actually getting my, you know, 6 month appointment yesterday, I believe it was. And so bottom line, she's still in there, right? Well, what is it that makes, why is she there so many years later? It's because it's, well, whole loyalty is probably a high value for her, but it's being on a team of people that are cohesive and they're on a mission together.
And that's, I think
that's what's different.
That's where I think the difference is, because if you fear investing in an employee, whether that's their education, their time, whatever it is, because they're going to leave, then I think the mirror has to be looked back on us to figure out,
right,
what am I doing that isn't building? Because if we're doing all these things correct,
yes, sir,
it
absolutely
should build the most incredible loyalty ever, because where else would they go?
That's the point. Those two ladies, the one who was in there yesterday, you couldn't get her out of that practice with a stick of dynamite.
Where would she go that she would get to be, you know, loved like that, cared for like that, you know, on a mission like that, you know, allowed to thrive like that? I mean, and that's my goal, right? Is I want my office for my team to be such an opportunity, right, that they cannot go anywhere else and, you know, be able to do as much, enjoy as much, make as much, have as much time off. Like, there's no one that can even compete, because we've set ourselves up. And so if you do that, then you don't care about investing in them, because they're not going to leave, right?
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. The lady I was referring to, I was thinking as you're speaking about, when did I hire her? I hired her in 1983. So do the math on that.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And it all has to, yeah, you couldn't get
it.
By the way, when I'd retired from dentistry about 21 years ago, the bottom line, actually about 20 years ago, when I retired from active practice, this lady already had over $200,000 in her retirement plan.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
Now,
well,
she's
and built. Somebody had to take the effort to, you know, maybe it's educate, inform, set up, give her the, I mean, because maybe I'm biased here, but, you know, I don't think most hygienists, most assistants are super, you know, have gotten a lot of training or education on the importance of a 401k plan and be able to do that.
Well, that's right. So guess what?
We need to
So for you to do that builds so much.
Absolutely.
You know, into those people, those employees.
Why would we not? That's what I mentioned, you know, several minutes ago when we first talked about this, is that first of all, do you guys want to just make good money and have a great lifestyle now? Or do you want to reach a point in time where you're totally financially, not just free, but you're abundant, right?
Yeah.
And you can, you know, not only live your life way beyond where you currently do, beyond the level of your dreams, but beyond that, you have resources you can use to help other people, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. 100%. Well, you first of all have to understand the magic of compounding, which I'm sure you guys do.
Yep.
Well, how do you have staff members understand that? You teach it to them.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
And you take someone who's a 21-year-old assistant in your office and say, you know what? You right now can put $5,500, I believe it is, dollars. Actually, it just went up to $6,000. That's what I was thinking. Just went up to $6,000, if I'm not mistaken. You could put $6,000 a year into a Roth IRA. That's on top of your 401k plan. Or here in the office, we can have an election for your 401k plan can have a Roth election inside it, right?
Well, and that's so empowering when you, I mean, To have team members that then you're building not only your own financial freedom, but financial freedom in them.
That's the point.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. And so she puts, then you have her run the numbers. So use the rule of 72. Okay. If your investments are getting 12%, how long does it take for the investment to double? It's going to take 6 years. Okay. So you're 21. So that's 6,000 you put in this year. When you're 27, how much is that?
12.
When you're 33, how much is it?
More.
24.
Yep. 48. But,
yeah.
We're 24.
Okay. And so 6 years later.
It's 48.
6 years later.
72.
No. 6 years later. No.
100.
Well, 48, 96.
96.
48, 48, 96. Yeah, yeah, 96. Round it off. Round it off and call it 100.
It was okay? It was a good
so
6 years.
So 6 years later.
It was a good 6 years.
Now, by the way.
Maybe they gambled.
By the time you reach, let's say, call it whatever you want to call it, 59 and a half, you can start taking money out then. Or you want to go to 65, 68, whatever you want to do. You pick your own number, okay? And people will usually, this is what I'll have people take a look at. So how much would you have? Oh, gosh, I'd have, you know, $782,000. I say, yeah, that's a pretty cool start. Yeah. That's out of the first year's contribution. Right. Now, make another little column of numbers next to that. You know, Mikey likes this. Why don't we do it again next year, right? So where do you get the $6,000? You figure out a way to get $12,000 worth of bonuses. You take half of it. You slam it in there. Now you got another column of numbers.
So you guys do that too? You guys talk about all
we talk about everything from startup to transition to
that got to a whole another
freedom.
Level. We went from emotional to finance.
He's speaking my language. You know what?
I'm looking at Sully's like
I was freaking junior in dental school, like a D3 right. junior. I like calling it a junior. I was a junior in dental school, and I went to a 2-day seminar type deal and saw a compounding interest basically graph and. A couple numbers
it's unbelievable.
Like that, and it literally changed my life. I mean, I went from knowing absolutely nothing to gobbling every bit of information I could on personal finance and money, the way money grows and investments, and just like
it's crazy.
Oh my gosh, it is fascinating, and it's
incredible. You've seen it graphed out.
Oh, it's incredible.
Right. I mean, the line is almost flat for years, and then all of a sudden it starts to turn up a little bit, and when it starts to turn, it goes into a power curve, and it shoots straight up like a rocket. So when staff members see that, and again, it's not about the money, but since we're going to be committed to have an incredible practice, be an incredible team players, really performing at a high level and taking care of every patient, if they were a loved one, guess what? Why should we not expect to be paid? Why should we not expect to have long-term financial gain?
That's why I love how we've kind of totally changed. We've gone kind of crazy on our bonus system and the way we pay people. But that was part of my deal was like, if we're going to make more, produce more, do all this stuff, you all should make more money and have more time off. Why not? Like, if
why
we
not?
Can do the same thing in less time.
Yeah.
Like that ticked me off about hourly employees. Because here's the problem. If you're an hourly employee, then you are disincentivized to some degree to be efficient.
Right.
Because the more efficient we are, yep. the less money you make.
Yes.
So that like fascinated. So anyways, I'm going off a tangent. Okay. So we're rounding up to, we're coming in here on, you know, almost 50 minutes or whatnot. And then I do want to kind of wrap things up because I know that this has been so good. I want to talk about something I want to talk about this because we were talking about this earlier. And I think it's a very valid discussion, and we really didn't get to finish the conversation, but I was telling you how lately, and a lot of our listeners know this because I've kind of shared a lot of it, but lately I've been in just a super funk. You know, and really this is the first time in my career, from a career standpoint, that I've kind of just felt like I love what I do. I absolutely love it. But for some reason, the last month or so, I just haven't had a lot of fun. I got the renovation going, we got the kid coming, and so... my mindset and perspective has just been down, you know, and I know that a lot of people go through this. It's this time and whatnot, we'll get through it. But you know, I was kind of sharing that with you. You were giving me your perspective, and I'd love to hear more of it because, you know, it's something that what's happening is as I go and as my dad and I and as the leaders of the team go, so does the team go, you know, and so. If we're lacking energy, if we're not, you know, there, you know, that wades into everything. And so it's something that I'm just personally trying to kind of fight through right now. But yeah. Anywho.
And so when we chatted briefly about that a moment ago, I told you what we refer to that as state management. being able to manage our emotional state no matter what the circumstances are around us. I also mentioned to Dr. Selle, for those of you who are listening, that that's probably the most valuable thing I ever learned from Tony Robbins. I mean, he's still a very dear friend to this day. I've got a golf game scheduled with him in a couple of weeks down in Palm Beach. But the point is, I when we were building this company, I had the privilege of traveling with him. I've been around the world a couple of times with him and all over the country, you know, many times doing seminars together as he was helping us build this thing. And I can tell you without question, by far, the most powerful, the most significant, the most profound thing I ever learned from Tony Robbins was state management. And it's so simple. In order to change your state, I mean, if you were listening, guys who are listening on the podcast, you know, Dr. Selle was talking about, he has, you know, this stuff going on with home, with construction. They're about to have a child. He's got his practice. Of course, dental practice is stressful. You all of a sudden got all these stresses. And if what you're focusing on is that, then you're going to be... you choose your own word, but a label some people might say overwhelmed, right?
Sure, yeah.
So the whole deal is change your focus. How do you do that? You ask yourself a better question. So no matter what's going on right now, I got this going on at the house, I got this going on, we're about to have a baby, how am I going to deal with that? I got my practice, I got this and that. Guess what? Ask yourself, what's great about this? What are the blessings that I haven't even noticed because I've been so focused on the stresses, right? And it'll change your thought process immediately. Now, the other thing, Tony—
just keep doing it. Just keep—
well, you do it daily. Yeah. Anytime you feel like you're in a funk, just say, okay, great. What blessings am I not noticing now?
Sure.
You know, question.
What's great? Well, what would be great if I were to notice it, right?
Right. Yeah,
oh, 100%. By the way, look over here. You know?
What are the—
yeah, because there are blessings
all
around.
Well, we do. Like right now, man, I think there's, like you said, there are so many good things going.
Exactly.
You know? And it's easy to dwell on the negative.
Part of it is like for Soli and me and a lot of other folks, that the question that I had was, how would we come up with what is it exactly, like the vision, the goal, the target of what we're looking at for 5 years or in 10 years or 15 years? Who... do you know, okay, this is a question because I actually sat down and I was looking online to find executive coaches. Like I was looking online, I was trying to figure out that, hey, I'm not crazy. Like I really want to do all this stuff. I want to have this, I want to have that, I want to do this. But then I know I can do it if I can plan everything the right way.
Well, you say Michael Jordan had a coach.
Right. What I want to do or what I wanted to do. So when I looked at all of these, it's like, how do I come up with having that coach who understands who I want to do, not a psychologist or a psychiatrist?
Tell them a little bit about your experience with what would be considered coaches. Like what have you struggled with?
I want the coaches to...
What has been your downfall with bringing people in your office to help you?
Oh, those coaches?
Yeah, I'm saying let's...
No, I wasn't even thinking about that. Like that's cool because I wanted to get... you say coaches, I call them consultants because they were not coaches. But,
you got the distinction already.
Right.
Good,
I already know. But the thing was that I realized...
You're talking more personally.
Personally, like managing, like, yes. So we're right now, for example, talk about you. Like, for example, you're looking at next year's schedule and you're looking at having so much stuff on your plate. And then you're looking at, okay, how am I going to prioritize this without hurting this? But I really like this and I like that. Like, how can somebody come and help people that do want to do more without calling them like crazies and like, oh, dude, you're going to chill out, Luke. You're fine. You're good. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, go back to the definition I gave you of coaching. It's taking on another person's commitment as if it were your own, right? And you get connected to that. So if a coach knows exactly what you want, that if that coach has enough experience and enough commitment and enough rapport with you, they can ask you the appropriate questions that will continuously drive you closer and closer to the fulfillment of your vision. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, it does. It totally does.
When you first started talking about this, it sounded to me like there might still be a little fuzziness in your mind about what you want. So
exactly.
I want to tell you about a very, very basic but unbelievably powerful formula that I learned from Tony years and years ago. That's one of the things I love about Tony's stuff. It is so simple. It's called the ultimate success formula. Number one, know your outcome specifically. Your outcome cannot be a wandering generality. It needs to be a meaningful specific, right?
One specifically. We talked about that, like knowing that is gosh.
So, what specifically do you want in every area of your life? We believe that my life mastery includes, first of all, mastering your emotions, right? Secondly, mastering your physical body, exercising consistently. I mean, staying on a good program. I worked out today for consecutive day number 510. I run a couple marathons, and I have
my cholesterol is high. I had a physical Friday.
Yeah, really?
Gosh.
When we finish recording, tell me. Well, you may want this on the recording. I can tell you how to get your cholesterol down very quickly.
And okay, let me hear it because I have not told my wife. She's gonna okay.
And I think this is common for a lot of people. My cholesterol is high too. Why don't we just?
That's probably because we drink fast food. We eat fast food and beer. Wow. Probably why. We're not exercising.
Wow. Okay. Well, let me simply say this. There's a combination.
You guys cannot get help.
Here's what I would recommend. You try this and see what happens.
Right.
Okay. You know what your cholesterol is right now,
yes.
Right?
210.
Every day. Yeah. And by the way, you know what the ideal cholesterol is?
Below 150.
100 plus your age, but never over 160. So how old are you right now?
30.
Okay.
130.
So your cholesterol ideally should be 130.
It's not 130.
Okay. Let me tell you
what
will happen.
Don't look like it.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to make a suggestion to you, okay. And I'd like you to do it religiously starting tomorrow.
All right.
Just, you know, you're not going to get it done tonight because you got stuff to do at home. So every single day, 500 milligrams of flush-free niacin.
I'm going to write this down.
The normal is 250. The normal, you know, dosage of flush-free niacin is 250.
500
daily. Also, two heaping tablespoons of Metamucil in water before each meal. Now, first of all, if you go to your doctor, what are they going to tell you to do?
Exercise, take diet, or give me a statin.
Give you a statin drug.
Yeah.
You know, and of course,
I don't want that.
Statin, no, you do not want statin drugs, okay? Very few physicians would ever tell you this, but I'm just telling you, you follow that and you watch what happens. I tell you who gave that to me, Dr. Jim Oaf. He's a PhD pharmacist, my brother-in-law, as a matter of fact. And his cholesterol was over 100.
Right
his
there.
Cholesterol was over 300 about 25 years ago. And of course, they wanted to put him on statin drugs, right? So what did he do? He did exactly what I've told you, okay? And within 6 months, his cholesterol had gone
from— You could get Metamucil from Amazon.
Yeah, well, get it wherever you want to get
fish
it.
Oils?
You can get it at CVS. Fish oils are great. I take them every day.
But his cholesterol come down to?
His cholesterol came down to 170.
Wow.
And it's been there for 20-some-odd years.
He's been doing the same thing,
and he
though?
Does the same regimen every day, and he changed nothing
500 milligrams
of
niacin.
500 flush-free niacin daily.
Huh.
And two heaping.
I don't know.
Yeah, you do that in what? In fact, call me afterwards and tell me call me 90 days from now. Tell me what happens. Go get it tested again.
We should really do it. I feel like I'm down to do it. If you're down, I have my.
Well, and what I've said is, like, you know, part of mine has been, we've been in an 800 square foot apartment with no kitchen since June 1st. So like when you eat out like that, it doesn't help. And then I have not exercised. I used to exercise every day.
So you got on some nice workout shoes there. What are you waiting on, bro?
You're telling me.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I think what you said, it's a mental thing. I got to mentally just overcome.
Just do it.
And just
do the Nike slogan, right? You got on Nike shoes. Let's put them to work. You just make a decision. An incision when you cut into something. A decision is to cut away from something. So if there's a behavior that's not empowering you, cut away from it today. Right? 30 minutes
These
of aerobic
so
exercise.
Great. I feel like this has got been a. Now, what are some of the things that you think
you go from?
You can change.
I love him, but we have to watch him on that
before
bridge.
Before you go to the next question, let me just finish
he
the last.
Just goes
one.
Off. Sometimes.
We talked about areas of life mastery. I told you two, right? Mastering your emotions, mastering your physical body, mastering your relationships, mastering time, mastering finances. There are all these areas what really will be powerful for you is to decide what is the outcome I'm after in this area.
In what, how many
in
years?
In each area.
See, my problem is like, okay, so 3 years you have a plan, then there's a 5-year plan, then there's a 10-year plan, then there's...
Here's what I would say. Keep it simple, okay? Where would you like to be 5 years from now in this particular area? Okay, well, to be there by then, where do you need to be in 2.5 years? Or where do you need to be in 2 years? Or year by year?
Well, the reality is it's going to reset. I mean, in 6 months, you got to relook at it. Because
that's what I'm looking at. Like last year, this time, I was nowhere. Like, I think...
You were worried if you were going to be able to pay your mortgage. Yeah.
Right. And now, like, so it's changing to where I'm like, where is the ultimate or optimized, the yearly plan that you do? Is it 3-year plan that you people like to look at the forward?
We start with a lifetime plan.
Lifetime.
Just all the way to the end. What do you want to accomplish in this area?
And then you have to work backwards from that.
Yeah, then you work backwards from a successful completion.
Reverse engineering.
Okay. But I'd like to also suggest when you look at these, I wouldn't refer to them as goals. I've heard that word come out a couple times tonight. I also want you to think about the neurolinguistics of this, the word goal. When we say a goal, what does our mind think, right? Our mind thinks, well, that's something I'd like. Yeah, it's a target, something I'd like to accomplish. Does every basketball go in the goal? Every shot go in the goal? Does every hockey puck go in the net, go in the goal? No. So subconsciously, what becomes true for people is that we accept the fact that goals may come to fruition or they may not. If a guy hits over 50% from behind the 3-point line, guess what? You know, he's probably an all-pro. Right? But the point is, it's a goal. Half the time they miss. So you don't want to miss half of your outcomes, right? So call them outcomes instead of goals, and all of a sudden we think differently about them.
So what do you call them?
Outcomes. Call them outcomes.
You just call them outcomes. So yeah. What you want to do, that's what you were saying, the outcome is the more important.
Yeah, exactly.
Where do you want it to be? Wow. Yeah.
And I think as far as, if there was anything I would tell you that I think probably would help every listener and you guys perhaps in your own practices, the number one way to grow the numbers in your practice is to accelerate your hygiene recare program. Okay. Now, I'll give you a couple statistics. Are you guys familiar with the term hygiene effectiveness rate? Have you ever heard that term before?
Not put that way, but potentially.
Okay. Well, let's see if we're on the same page with this. Okay. We call it hygiene effectiveness rate is the percentage of your active patient base consistently coming through your recare program. Okay. And it's a very simple calculation to make and find that out.
I think
out.
Dental Intel has that.
Not specifically like that, but a similar one.
Okay.
Right. So the national average as far as hygiene effectiveness rate as a percentage is between 30 and 40%.
There's a lot of people coming to the doctor's chair that aren't going in hygiene.
Bingo. Okay. Well, who controls that?
We do.
Yeah. You better believe
it. That's the
problem. Exactly. So it's patient education.
The buck stops with us sometimes.
It's patient education along the way, including the hygienist talking to her as she's going through this whole hygiene course. You can talk to her about, you know, educational things of that nature and take care of the technical part of the treatment at the same time. But the point is, what's 50 to 80% of the dentistry done in North America? Cut it down the middle. 50 to 80 is a big range. Call it 65. Mm-hmm. Two-thirds of the dentistry done in North America is not done on new patients. It's done on recare patients. Now, if a typical practitioner has a hygiene effectiveness rate between 30 and 40% and has this huge vision and it includes, you know, fully funding a pension, you know, profit share, whatever, for me and my entire team, guess what? It's going to be difficult to do that. So trying to have an exemplary level of production in a practice when the recare system is what drives higher production quickly. I mean, that's how we put practices on steroids. We energize and reactivate the patient base into the hygiene recare program. If you are at 30 to 40%, I want you to think about this, then trying to reach your target, for example, or your outcome is like trying to drink with a Slurpee, you know, straw out or a big Slurpee cup with a swizzle stick. Right? We got to open that up because most of the dentistry done in North America is done on recare patients. So having your team collectively participate in a reactivation program is extremely powerful.
To call the patients.
Yes, sir. And there's a way to speak to the patient. So first of all, we always want to pre-appoint the patient while they're in.
Right.
That keeps them on the program. But simultaneously, we want to take all the people that have fallen off the wagon and get it back up on the wagon.
Yeah, it always fascinates me how people will spend.
What if they cancel? And then you're like, forget it. Why do you want to call them?
Well, if they, so you can cancel or no show?
Which, like both.
Which is worse?
Don't you guys?
Is there a difference?
So here's the thing. The hygiene, I feel like so many people cancel.
Okay, let me ask you a question, Payman. Would you rather have them cancel or no show?
I like them to cancel. No, when I said cancel, I meant no shows, I guess.
Well, they're two different phenomena.
Make up your mind. Right?
No, I meant no shows. Like, they don't even care.
Yeah, no show. Right. So then you have to decide how you're going, what you want to have your policy be about that, right? So.
Do you get a cancellation or no shows?
In hygiene, we rarely get no shows.
Really?
We get a lot. We'll get cancellations, obviously, but we rarely get no shows in hygiene.
And one of the things that I've, if you're not doing this, how far in advance do you schedule your ReCare patients? How far? If I'm in your office today and it's 6 months to the day?
I guess, give or take.
Okay. So
a week or so.
Let me give you and your listeners an idea that I think would really help you. So today is November 7. So you would schedule it for the 7th day of 6 months from now, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you have a last,
June.
So if you have a last minute cancellation, right? When June rolls around or May rolls around.
May.
So the month of May rolls around, it's May 7th. Uh-huh. The guy who walked out here today is scheduled for May 7th, calls in and cancels. Well, everybody else that's on the schedule at that point in time, we're in to see you about that point in time. So what if, I love what if questions. What if you scheduled your ReCare patients 6 months and 2 weeks in advance? You will have then created a two-week level or layer, let's call it, of patients who are all reactivatable to be pulled forward. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And then we train people and have an accountability in place for one or more people to be the ones who are Johnny on the spot. They are the people accountable. There's a last minute cancellation, anything that comes in within 24 hours of the appointed time, right? So what do they do immediately? Mm-hmm. They call the people who are, you got them 2 weeks out, right? Who can be pulled forward because they are scheduled 6 months plus 2 weeks, right? You know how many times you have to speak to a patient typically? Because I don't do this, but I talk to all my staff members who do and offices that I work with. So what happens is they're pulling these people in. And how many people would you think they'd have talked to before someone is willing to move forward for them? Nothing. 2 to 3. So you stop and ask yourself the question, right here is the list I can pull from, right? So I call the patient, so they'd be willing to do us a huge favor. If it's a 3 o'clock appointment on Tuesday, the first thing I'm going to do is look at the 3 o'clock appointment next Tuesday, right? And ask them if they'd be willing to do us a favor. We've had a significant change in our schedule today. Just wanted to call you, see if there's any way possible that you could do us a huge favor coming in today at 3 instead of next Tuesday at 3. Your patients like you. If they didn't, they wouldn't be coming here.
It's true.
So they're like friends.
That's easy to implement.
Yeah.
That's very a good one.
Pearl.
Two weeks plus the 6 months.
If you start that tomorrow, though, you're not going to be able to capitalize on it for 6 months and 2 weeks from tomorrow, right? But at that point in time, you've got that for rest of your career.
6 months goal. Yeah. Target. Don't use goal.
And having a person or people, one or two on a team who they are the accountability people to get that handled. When a last minute cancellation comes in, it's directed to them. They go into an isolated office or
figure it out.
Yeah. And they get on the phone. They need a phone. They need a computer, mm-hmm. right? Terminal. And so the bottom line is they don't leave the room until that they've pulled somebody forward. They've got hundreds of people to pull from.
That's true.
That's a game changer.
That's a good one. Yeah. So how did you, after 20 years now, you stopped?
It was around 20 years ago, yeah.
So now you're full-time doing coaching.
Yes.
And what is the future looks like for you as far as the hours? How do you schedule? How many people, you said something before we started, 100 executive coaches?
Our company. Now our company, we're by far the big kahuna in the room.
Right. Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about the company? Like right now, how many people, like who's involved? What do you guys do? A little bit with people that are listening, like they want to get in touch with
yes.
you guys.
So first of all, our company is franchised.
Okay.
So everywhere in the country, the franchises are set up on a zip code specific
area, like area. Location, mm-hmm. yeah.
Correct.
And so they look on what Fortune Management.
www.fortunemanagement.com. They can go online. They can find out who the coaches are in their area. We have executive coaches all over the country. And if there's an area that does not have a franchise yet, then that area is still technically owned by the parent company. It doesn't mean that they can't, that a coach can't work with somebody in that area. They just get paid by the parent company, right? So,
what if you don't like the executive coach that is there? Like, so how do the people get into, so like they do a consultation? How does that work out? The whole thing of like hiring somebody?
Typically, I'll tell you how I do it, and I've trained our teams in how to do it, and they should be very close to what I'm actually telling you right now. So before I ever go in to work with an office, the first thing I do, because I'll have a conversation with the doctor, I'll find out what the biggest issues are, what would you like to accomplish, and I'm hearing wanting specifics, not generalities, right? And then, so we'll set up a time for actually for me to come into the office. And I'll then we'll send a letter to the team asking, and I'll give them a list of things I need as far as reports prior to going in. So I already know what's going on before I come in there. But the most important thing is I ask the staff members to please give me the main concerns they have about the practice. And that if they'd like it to be anonymous, no problem whatsoever. Put it in a sealed envelope, put all the sealed envelopes together, mail them to me. Before I go in, I already know all the mischief that's going on, if there is any. Mm-hmm. Or if there are relationships that are not in place or people not, you know, being team players, all that stuff, I already know it before I show up. So then my job is to make sure that I guide people through how to put correction in place for those things.
How many of those people do you think they're going to put it knowing that the doctor might look
you
at
would
it.
Be well first of all they're told that it's the that it's there's a confidentiality there, right? Seal it up, send it to me. I'm not going to share that with anybody.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's but cool. See, it tells me, see, if I'm for example going in to see a doctor, I don't need to tell him what the issues are. I need to fix the issues and then have him see how I fixed them. And guess what? He probably knew there were issues to begin with, or at least had some sense of it.
How long does it take to, like, so how do you guys work as far as, is it like a contract base? Is it hourly base? Is it
No. No, we actually have a, first of all, we have so many different programs, and I'm not here to market fortune, but we have what's called a training.
Just curious to know for people, yeah. Like they want to know yeah. more.
So we have a training university. Mm-hmm. It's typically about 18 months in duration, right? So there's seminars that go on, and the coach in that area is trained in not only how to work with them along the way, but to make sure that everything is being taught in these seminars and the consults when this person is in the office is being implemented. Because the final step of coaching is follow through or follow up, you know, making sure you're following up and you're getting things done consistently that in such a way that's going to empower the result that people are after.
One of the things I noticed that as far as coaches is that they need to be on site.
Oh, absolutely.
They need to be present. Now, how much of y'all's time is spent in the office with the team, with the staff, with the doctor versus?
Teams do it differently. Okay. So I work with people all over the country. And so what happens many times, so a local coach in an area is typically, you know, at some frequency in the office, in staff meetings, you know, helping guide people in the right direction. That's not even essential because I do Skype calls with offices that are all over the place, right? I go in offices, my typical office will be in about 3 times a year, but I'm also doing coaching calls every 2 weeks. I call them coaching calls, coaching Skype meetings or calls if they prefer to just do a phone call. I have a coaching line they call in, and we do that twice a week. So we're addressing every single concern.
Twice a week?
I'm sorry, twice a month.
Twice a month, okay.
Yeah, twice a week.
Dang,
that would be
that's good.
That would be no, it's twice a month. But guess what? In a conversation in 30 minutes, they're 30 minutes duration. Pre-scheduled, and in 30 minutes you can cover a lot of material and also put a lot of things in place. It'll take them a couple of weeks to put in place, and then 2 weeks later making certain it got put in place, right? And of course we have monitoring systems so we can track the monitors and see.
That's awesome.
Everything.
Yeah. How many doctors right now in like, so are you covering, for example, you said you go from Canada to
I go all over the place. Many people in our country, in our company, go all
but
over the place.
But what does that zip code mean, as far as you said? There's
okay. So if someone does not have, let's say the franchise for Ottawa, Canada, or for Coral Gables, Florida, then anybody in this company can go in. If they have a client in there who wants their services, they can go in there and work. And basically, the parent company collects the money, and they get a share of those dollars. If it's a franchise, yeah. If the franchise, first of all, the franchise is trained to handle his own territory or her own territory, mm-hmm. right? But if you're asking if other people can come in, I mean, sometimes people want a different coach, right?
There are only two dentists within the whole organization.
One of them is actually retired now. Yeah. I'm the only one. Yeah, you're looking at him.
That's
interesting. But you know what? Let me just tell you something. Our people are so well trained. I don't take this. This is like my company, right? I'm the, you know, only one knows anything. These people are unbelievably well trained. They
oh, we know.
Their,
Gosh, we
they
said
know.
That with Reagan and John.
I watched that podcast.
What was it, a while back? A couple months ago. That was a blast. They're fun.
They're so well trained. They're
so
unbelievable.
Now those are also within the Tennessee zip code.
Yes.
Yeah, right. So they're
well, actually, they own the franchises in Charlotte, North Carolina, Atlanta, Birmingham.
Oh, so you could own multiple.
You can buy multiple franchises. Yeah. I think all the way out to down to Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe they're in West Arkansas. but they got a big, big territory, and they have coaches working for them, right?
Oh, wow. So this is amazing. I love coaches.
Doc, thank you so much for joining us.
You're more than welcome.
I'm so glad you came in town, because it's, you know, half the time we're doing this over Zoom.
It's so much better when you're in town.
It is fun when we can do it live in person. We get to do this a lot of meetings and different events we're at, but it is fun. So I thank you for driving up.
Well, I've enjoyed it very much. You know, you could talk in, you know, 50 states and 50 consecutive days, and guess what? It's all the same stuff, because doctors have the same issues.
No, you're right.
We were never taught this stuff in dental school.
You're exactly right. And then the beauty is it's a fun time to be in dentistry. You know,
it really yes, it is.
And there's so much opportunity. And I do think that we need to, you know, as young dentists continue to, we need to continue to fine-tune our stuff. And I honestly think
if I had a coach back when I was like 20s, like in undergrad,
I don't know if you would have been coachable in your 20s.
You might not have been.
But I think the whole concept of coaching, I think it's very fascinating, because we always look at it to be like, oh, I got this stuff. You know, I got Google. I'm going to get on there and just like look up and see like, how can I cope with this? I'm going to read some books. I'm going to do some self-motivational stuff, do some yoga, do all that stuff. But then there's something else when it comes to coaching.
So here's what it is, right? Or this is part of it. There are three domains of knowledge. There's what you know, there's what you don't know, and there's what you didn't know you didn't know, or you don't know that you don't know, right? So I know a lot about management. I know a lot about dentistry. I don't know anything about quantum physics. And guess what? I don't care about quantum physics. But the powerful piece is discovering part of what you didn't know you didn't know.
Yeah.
The knowing of which would have been profound.
Well, and for you, Pam, I think you're a prime example of someone who, like, I mean, you get so much coaching in your clinical dentistry. I mean, if you think about it, all your mentors, all your training, all your resources, I mean, you've got more clinical coaching than I would argue anybody our age. But the flip side of that is we've got to also get the same kind of coaching and mentorship, whether it's education, it's a coach coming in our office, books, you know, whatever it is, on the management side of our businesses 100%. As much as
it's keeping
side.
A balance.
So
there.
Much more value.
You are so clinical CE heavy, but you are totally
nothing
in bingo.
It doesn't mean going to it doesn't them. Mean stop that.
Right.
Yeah, just use some of those investment dollars to get a balance between that, because you may be the best clinician in the planet, but if your practice
is not, if it suffers, and you don't have that social skills to get this, which is very awesome. Well, thank you so much again. This has been I feel like this was more like a consultation. Like it's something
I learned so much for me every time.
Yeah, I feel like I learned so much.
Well, I've enjoyed it very much, Joe.
Might have to come over in Tullahoma and see what's going
Doc,
on.
Doc, thank you so much. This has been a blast.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Hey, everybody, work smarter, not harder, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.